is David Reske, CEO of NowSpeed Marketing, and welcome to this edition of In the Now, where we focus on uncovering the myths and misunderstandings of marketing and leadership with some of the world's most interesting people. And my guest today is Electra Gavoni. Electra, did I pronounce your name correctly?
You did. Wow. Yes, you did. Great job.
Awesome. So Electra is a business coach with TAB, the Alternative Board, with over 25 years of experience, and she specializes in leading transformative change with senior executives at growing companies, and she's based in Burlington, Massachusetts. So Electra, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Pleasure.
Electra, you've worked in some very large companies in senior roles in leadership. How did you decide to move into leadership coaching?
You know, and you're right. It's one of those things that you learn a ton as you're kind of working in a bigger organization. And I was amassing a set of skills, whether it was change management, communication, team building, really how to grow an organization and scale an organization. And I was doing that within a very large organizations. And so I really started to think about the idea of how can I help the small and medium-sized companies have sustainable growth. And I am a huge believer that the role that small and medium-sized businesses play in healthy communities, you absolutely want to encourage these companies to figure out how to ride the waves of whatever's happening in the industry or the economy so that they continue to be providers of, you know, just jobs and support in the local community. So I wanted to be a part of that scene.
Wow, that's great. So you're making a difference. You're using your skills effectively. You're leveraging that with people that that you respect. It's like all we can ask in a career, right? You're making it happen.
It ticked a lot of boxes for me.
Yeah. So you've had a lot of experience with business owners and leaders. And we talked about this Mythbuster question about business ownership. And the question we want to explore today is that the business owner needs to carry the world on their shoulders. Is that true or not true?
It is not true. And you know, often you encounter business owners and, you know, this is often their baby. It's their brainchild. They are more attached to the vision, per se, of what they're trying to create in the world than maybe anybody else. And so as a result, you can find business owners who really just carry the world on their shoulders. They feel as if people are not able to do what they do. It takes too much time to try and bring others aboard, maybe having a hard time finding the help that they need. So there are factors that go into this, but sometimes it's the mindset of the individual to say, what's the stuff that you tell yourself that says it has to be you? And or what? Or failure, or it's not going to be done well. And it honestly, it's the path to burnout is what it is. And when I talk about sustainable growth, if the business owner doesn't find a way to move beyond this sort of block, this myth, and they're not going to be able to scale their company. And sadly, you almost sometimes die on the weight of your own success if you don't figure some of these things out.
Wow, that's a lot you've just talked about there. We're just going to pack a couple of those ideas kind of one at a time. So let's just kind of take on a few of those ideas that business owners have. One of them is that people just can't do what I do. So I am a specialist. I'm an expert. I'm the best salesperson. I know my business inside out. There's nobody that can do it the way I do it. So why is that a problem? And and how do a business owners kind of overcome that?
It's not uncommon, particularly as I start to work with business owners, that we start to, you know, once we kind of get a great sense of like, where are you going with this business? What are you trying to do? And often the idea is 5 years from now, I want to be able to sell it. So let's just take that as a trajectory, and maybe it's 10 years. But if you have any hopes at all at ever having this be a valuable commodity and perhaps a retirement thing that you have out there, you're going to need to figure out how to put yourself out of a job. And what we do in terms of coaching for someone that has that as a goal is we start to look very, very clearly at who you are, perhaps as a technician in your organization, and who you are as a business owner. And we start to look differently on, let's start to break this world up and look for ways in which others can help. And some of this is freeing up very important time to allow you to also be the business owner in a way that you're viewing the strategy that gets you to your ultimate goal. You're able to play that role.
Do you feel like the trap that some business owners get into is that they've created a job instead of a company?
It's a great question, because some folks don't necessarily, like, sometimes people start off with it being a job, and then before they know it, it's like, oh, I guess this is a company. But that wasn't necessarily a fully conceived notion when they started.
Yeah. So how do you help them with the planning side of that? Because, you know, if they're a solo entrepreneur and they start to grow, they hire their first couple of employees, how do you get them from, yeah, I'm just kind of 1 week in revenue, one client at a time. Yes, might go to business tomorrow. They kind of get on the track. In a few months, well, I hired an employee, I've got some customers, I'm getting more revenue, I'm getting more demand. And suddenly they're going, how do you help them into that longer term planning when they're maybe so used to that short term mindset as a solopreneur?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the first things to do is like, okay, let's create a little breathing space to allow for, because, like, you know, like there's the tyranny of the urgent, mm-hmm, in which you're always functioning in that way. It's like, okay, we need to create a moment in which we're going to take a deep breath and we're going to think out a bit more. A part of what we start looking at is, what's the premium thing? If you had to think about your time, what's the most critical things you need to be doing as a business owner? That often what you hear is, oh, and I have no time to do that. So you start to pull the pieces apart, and maybe it's because, and then at 11 o'clock at night, I'm doing all the financial bookkeeping, and then I'm doing some marketing pieces. So you start to pull the organization apart in terms of the functional pieces of it. And if we're early stage, you know, sometimes we're looking at some fractional help who you can pay incrementally for the time they can support your business. But it does start to, you start to have to articulate what are critical processes and what are critical procedures that are important for your ability to be able to delegate this to others. So we start to pull some of these pieces, and then you get some time back. If we do this well, if you're able to, for example, bring in a bookkeeper who can handle some level of invoicing, financial reporting on a monthly basis, and you hire someone who follows the procedures and supports you, you're going to have some important time back. And we're going to keep reinvesting in those, you know, those premium activities that you as the business need to focus on.
And that seems like a really critical piece to decide, what are the critical pieces I need to focus on, and where do I need to hire, and where can I get fractional people or contractors to start to take some of the things so they can start to work on the business, not for the business, right?
Exactly.
So what about that second issue that you mentioned, which is the excuse maybe that I can't find the right people? And nobody, I mean, not only can nobody do what I do, I can't, if I wanted to find the right people, I can't, I just can't find them. Yeah. What do you do with that?
You know, and so some of it is sort of digging in, because sometimes you start to look at, like, well, what is it exactly that you're asking? You're calling it X, but what is the thing? And sometimes there's a whole bunch layered in there in which pieces of it maybe do need to stay. But you start to say, like, okay, imagine a process in which you could then, you know, it, whether it's information transfer, that you can view this as something in way in which pieces of this can go to somebody else. And, you know, and sometimes you're fighting you know, it, yes, you cannot say hire yourself, but when you start to shape it in a different way, and sometimes it's document it so that it's out of someone's head and now on paper, that can become a part of a standard operating guide. The more you're creating, and then sometimes it's systematic stuff that you need to invest in. So you're going to move out of that spreadsheet that you spent, you know, 5 years that only you can understand and touch without breaking it. And we're going to invest in something that's a little bit more industry standard in which the skills are. So sometimes you have to look at the systems piece along with the process and procedure. And then it's moving beyond a bias that might be held in which you're asking people to take a step at a time. And sometimes you're looking at doing something that's low risk first, that the skill set, once you've moved it into this space, become much more available because we've unpacked that a bit.
Yeah. So and you define the right process, systems, put together the job description, and then you can hire for them.
Yes. Because you start to, if you're trying to hire you, let's say, because that's how you're seeing what you need, let's shift it so that you're not necessarily needing that as your entry requirement.
Yeah. So let's come back to that, the piece of the myth buster question that we started with, which is that the business owner needs to carry the world on their shoulders. And to carry implies two things. One is the work, which we've been talking about, but the other part is really the feeling of ownership or the responsibility, the care. The owner cares more than anybody. So I can imagine an owner saying, I can't bring on the right people because they just, no one will ever care about this as much as I do. And maybe that's true, but how do you get your teams, how do you get your employees to care?
Yeah. And so this is where you're in the conversations when talking to someone who owns a business, you start to talk about being a leader. And what does it mean to lead people? Hmm. What does it mean that they understand the vision? That they have a sense of purpose attached to the mission of your company? And the more that you can bring people's passion and inspiration and kind of tie it to what you are doing together and celebrating it and being transparent about the impact that you're making in the world, that's inspirational. People want generally to be a part of something bigger and feel their contributions in the world mattering. And so helping your company and employees have a sense of that mission of who we are and being proud of it is all about being that leader that brings the people who now care, like their hopes and dreams are enmeshed with what it is that your company's doing. They're showing up differently.
Yeah. So you've got to be a leader who articulates the mission, articulates the vision, brings people along in that, gets that engagement. So everybody cares about that as much as you.
Yeah.
And the mission, I don't suppose, can be just be, I want to make a lot of money as the owner, right? Yeah. So what's, because that doesn't motivate anybody. Yeah. Let's just make the boss rich. Yeah. That's
exactly. A bad thing. Right? I mean, everyone wants to earn a fair wage.
Right.
Absolutely. You know, however, what else, you know, and so much of this stuff, sometimes we try to rationalize everything, but a lot, you're talking about the emotions that are in play and like what inspires someone, like what's important to them in this world? What mark do they want to make? Hmm. And when you tap into that level of passion of what someone cares about, and then you have a company that through its own articulation of values and the culture that invites the person who cares in and is a part of this culture and feels that they can contribute the best that they can be because the culture enables it, then you've got you're putting together something that is powerful. And you're going to have that team who's like, it doesn't matter how big the wall is that you have to climb, because their eyes are on the vision of where we're going and not the obstacle in front of them. That's the team that's going to figure out, regardless of, like, again, the obstacles, that's the team that will figure out how to go through it, climb around it, you name it. We're going to do this because we are committed.
And when you build that team, now you've got something. You got something that will last. You got something that you could sell maybe later. You got a team. You're spending less time and less stress in your own world. Let's talk about another thing that you mentioned earlier, which was the path to burnout. So when you're carrying the world on your shoulders, it's easy to kind of get burned out. And what, let's just talk about, what are the downsides to carrying the world on your shoulders? Because maybe, hey, maybe I'm a business owner. I'm really good at carrying the world on my shoulders. And, you know, I don't mind it. So, but why is it, why is it a bad thing?
It's not uncommon that business owners, I will call them hyperachievers, like they are driven individuals, and sometimes it's almost like a badge of honor, like how much I can personally take. But I will invite that there's some short-term thinking going on here when this becomes the solution. So the reality is, and it's not always visible at a given moment. You have to play it out a little bit to say, okay, now let's talk a year. Now let's talk 2 years. And when you start to see that the business owner is no longer, for example, working what is a reasonable, you know, with maybe some spikes during certain times, but a reasonable time in which they can actually take a vacation. They can have dinner with their family. They can attend their children's events. If that gets totally excluded by the intensity of owning a company, then you're kind of on a road for your personal life sort of almost disappearing while your work life totally takes over. And we know what happens. Divorces happen. You know, the relationships with friends and family breaks down. And none of that is a part of an equation for a happy, balanced life. This thing takes over. And then when you also tell yourself, like, I need to be the one that has the answers. And you look in the mirror always for the solution. And sometimes it's there. But then how do you feel? Like, when it comes to, like, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and I feel like I've exhausted all the how I know to solve this, and I still don't have a solution. That sense of it can be fear, terror, lack of sleep. Now we're piling that on. So let's talk about what that over time does to you physically. All of these things are gonna eat away at your ability to be the best business owner and go after this thing that you have started because of this passion that you had. And I meet people often who are in that burnout moment in which they're like, why did I even start this in the first place? Because I'm done.
Right. And it just doesn't have to be that way. You know, I read a really fascinating book recently called Die with Zero. And the whole idea was, lots of good ideas, but one of the concepts in the book was that money is there to help us enrich our life experiences. And if you're kind of making a lot of money in your business and you're ruining your life because you're letting the business take over your relationships, your health, your spare time, your fun, you know, what are we doing? Right. Yeah. But in America, I feel like it's almost this cliche that says, hey, if you're going to start a business, you got to expect to work 68 hours a week for the next 5 years just to get it off the ground. Is that really true? Or is the smart leader capable of delegating, hiring smart, planning well, to execute, to kind of bring on build a company within a reasonable amount of work? There are probably owners that say, I don't want to work at all. I want to do the 4-hour work week, right? But can a business owner launch a company, get it off the ground in a reasonable work week?
You know, you're going to have times in which it's intense, in which, yes, you are in deeper than the reasonable work week. But You want that to be the exception. You don't want to build the business with that is the only way of succeeding in the business. And that's where, if you can't figure out that equation, it's only a matter of time before it fails. And so the smart business owner, and if you've read the E-Myth and the notion of like the different roles that you're actually playing as you start a company, the one that remembers that they're building a company and not just a job, not just I'm surviving each moment, and has a longer term view at what that company needs to look like, you put the pathways in to being able to hire help, being able to, like, you know, there are certain things when you're designing it, design it with someone else doing this in mind. So therefore, what do I need to start to document even when it's only me? So those small actions start to put in place the capability of a future model of operation. And honestly, that is the better path to being able to grow and succeed in your company than the I just should expect that I need to give 80 hours a week all the time.
So let's say you're a business owner and you've been stuck in this way of working for, 5 years, and
Yeah.
you're trying to make it work, and you've hired people that's they've they're not good enough. You've kind of cycled through a lot of people. You haven't done the process and system. You're a coach. What's the role of a coach in kind of coming in and helping break that cycle and getting
Yeah.
that entrepreneur to the point where they can delegate and plan and let go and hire better? How do you, as
Yeah.
a coach, kind of approach that kind of a CEO to help them kind of get to the next place?
Yeah. You know, so thinking about where we're going is always where we start. And then in the context of where we're going, and this is both on a personal side and in a company side, we start to look at what's most critical. And then when we look at what's most critical, you start to be able to prioritize how some time should be spent. One of the first things that usually becomes apparent is that there's a whole level of administrative function that does need to get done. It's not that it's like busy work, but it becomes this obvious place in which this doesn't have to be you. Like the value add here is minimal. It has to be done, but it just needs to be done by someone who gets trained to do it properly. So carving that away and now starting to build trust that you can start to, and maybe you start with low-hanging fruit, because you know, for often this feels as if now you got someone in your kitchen and you don't like it. Like you're not used to this. So you have to start to build the muscles to trust that, yes, in fact, help can truly be helpful and not just somebody else that you're going to need to go redo the work that they did because they didn't do it well. So by doing that, and very often in the small business world, it's administrative function and it's financials, which very few business owners went into this because they understand corporate reporting, tax accounting, you know, this is something they're struggling just to get by so that they can at least see something. And often they kind of view it as, I've got money in the bank. I don't really know what all these numbers mean. One mistake, you should understand what the numbers mean because the numbers in the bank are not telling you the story. So we start to get the support. And now, how much smarter are you? Because you now say have a comprehension on what your true profit and loss is. And so we're, you know, working to break this knot apart and gain some momentum. You know, often another place that's very helpful to the CEO is because they're often kind of more the visionary. They may be an innovator in the space and they may have technical brilliance. And the creation part is most enthralling to them. When it comes to productionizing it, making it bulletproof, making it operational, this is not fun. So another way of kind of breaking things up is, now who's the person in your organization who can productize, maximize, minimize the cost that it's spending to create whatever it is, maximize the profit, because they're going to hone this and make it so that it's consistent and executable and scalable. That may not be the CEO. So finding that person that you can sometimes pair with, and it's like a COO function, can be the, and then what opportunities does the visionary, who may have seven other things that they want to go develop, free them up, because that's their genius. And now you have, and so you start to, you're building the organization based on those capabilities. And it can be the pieces of the puzzle that become most crucial to this being able to get to the next level.
And that just can be, that can be really powerful. I just had an example of that today. So I believe a lot in process and systems. And one of the things we were talking about is we need a new process, run a digital agency, and we needed a new process for when clients cancel. If clients call and say, hey, I'm canceling my contract. There's a whole bunch of things that happen. So you have to alert the people that are doing the work. You have to check the contract. You got to look at billing. There's receivables. Yep. Is there passwords? Is account? There's all these kinds of stuff. And we didn't really have this defined as a process. So we started to put together a process. And my controller said, well, the first thing that should happen is they should notify you as the CEO. You should reach out to the client and you should try to, see if you can save the relationship. And immediately I said, no, time out. Doesn't have to be me. So really we should create another process. So the service leaders who understand what their people are doing should be owning that and create a new process. And it was just a little example of what you're talking about, where could have created a process where I was in the middle of it. I owned it and I could have done a good job with it. Maybe not as good as others, but I think that, creating processes where the CEO is not in the middle of it is usually a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to think about, like, what's your path to empowering? And, and I am a fan of managing by objectives. It's like, often, the micromanager may want to tell in enormous detail how to accomplish something. And, sometimes the better path is say, here's where this is what it needs to look like. This is what goodness looks like. And now allow the creativity of the team to find a really great path to that outcome.
Yeah. And that's empowering to them, and it makes people want to be part of that organization. Yeah. Well, you've described a really powerful role of the coach, really helping come alongside them, helping set goals, figuring out what's most critical, figure out what functions can be, moved to other people, maybe helping source those, thinking through process and systems. Yep. It makes a big difference. So, in your role, if people want to learn more about you or your coaching services, how would they do that?
Well, and another thing I want to mention in terms of an approach to coaching that we use in the alternative board, which is TAB for short, is that we do put together peer groups. And so that notion of being alone at this and kind of having the world on your shoulders, a peer group can help too. So these are small groups, at most 10 other business owners sitting around the table. You get together monthly. You talk through something important happening in your business. And you each have that moment. You gain advice and you give advice. And so it's another example of, what a really good board of directors does in a more publicly traded company. This is making that same capability accessible to the small and medium sized business owner. So I just want to mention that, because that's another piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, that's powerful, because it's not just you as the coach helping, you're getting advice and support from other business owners who are going through the same thing that you are. So very powerful.
Yep. Yep. And so reaching out to me, I'm certainly available online on LinkedIn. But, my email is electra@tabbostonnw.com. And, we actually have, we'll call them sample boards for people who are kind of curious about this peer group experience and what it's like to talk to people you haven't met and gain value from the conversation. So we do this in sort of like a, here's a 2-hour sampler of what this experience is like. And so we do that once a month. And so that's another invitation that I have for a business owner who's curious. Reach out to me and I can set you up with that too.
That's great. It sounds like a really powerful process. And with your service, you get both that coaching and the peer group that can really help. It sounds like a business owner get unstuck, figure out what their priorities are, get the right technical or support that they need to kind of grow and scale or achieve whatever goals that they might have. So
very powerful.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, thanks, Electra, for taking the time to talk to us. I will put links to all of this on the landing page and on the page for this, and hopefully turn some good conversations for you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thanks so much. Such a pleasure.
Thank you.